Welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks with expert advice from Jim Lang, Pittsburgh-based CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert. Jim is also the author of Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later. To find out more about his book, his practice, Lang Financial Group, and how to secure Jim as a speaker for your next event, visit his website at retiresecure.com. Now, get ready to talk smart money.
Hello and welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. I'm your host, Nicole DiMartino, and of course I'm here with Jim Lang, CPA and attorney and best-selling author of Retire Secure. And as you've been hearing me over the past couple of weeks, Jim is about to bring out his third book, The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. This book, I've read it. It's excellent. It's already getting some fantastic testimonials, and it can really change your life, and it certainly can change the lives of your family. So you're definitely going to want to check it out. And if you want to get a glimpse of it before it's right off the press, I want you to head to our website, which is retiresecure.com. We have a block there titled The Roth Revolution. If you sign up under that, which is just giving us your email address, I'm going to reply back to you with a table of contents and a free chapter so you can see what you're in for, and I know you're going to really like it. Plus, you'll get some updates on the book and when it's going to come out and how you'll be able to order that. So I wanted to let you know, again, that's retiresecure.com. And so today, I have to say, I am so excited about today's show, and Jim knows I've been excited, because today we have Barbara Stanny joining us. Barbara, are you there?
I am.
Well, thank you. Wonderful. Welcome to the Lang Money Hour.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I'm personally thrilled to have you here, because I've spent a little over 13 years in the financial industry. In the last five, I would say, I have focused on working with women myself here in the Pittsburgh area and addressing their challenges and unique needs. And I've on many occasions looked to your wisdom, and I've shared that with the ladies here. So in a way, I'm just so excited to be talking to you in person. So I wanted to personally thank you for what you do and all the help that you give us.
Well, thank you. That was so nice of you to say. Made my day.
Well, good. I mean it. And today's my birthday, so this is the best birthday present I could have received.
Well, happy birthday.
And I didn't know that either. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I want to tell our listeners a little bit about Barbara before we get started. Then we're going to turn it over to her. She's going to tell us her story. And I love this. A little bit about Barbara. Barbara's a woman on a mission. That's the first thing you'll see on her website. She's an accomplished author. I believe you have five books out. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All of which you can see and read on her website, barbarastanny.com. She is also a nationally recognized motivational speaker. In addition, Barbara's famous workshop series. In addition to that, she travels around the country. And we'll talk a little bit more about the retreat she has coming up at the end of September here shortly. But she's been on Good Morning America, The View, Extra, The O'Reilly Report, CNN, CNBC, Fox News, PBS, you name it, she's been on it. Again, she's a true inspiration to people, and not just women. People everywhere turn to her. So we're so delighted to have her join us today. And again, if you want more information, barbarastanny.com, and that's just BarbarastanNy.com. So I'm going to turn this over to Jim, because I know he wants to get the conversation started just as much as I do. So,
well Barbara, Nicole said, and your all your information is, you are a woman on a mission. And it seems that your personal story is very commingled with your work.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought perhaps if we actually started with your story, how you got involved in this, and then we can get into some of the other pieces of advice. But I think that will give people a perspective on where you're coming from, and then we can take it from there.
I grew up in a wealthy family. My father was the R of H&R Block. And the only advice he ever gave me about money was, don't worry. Don't worry. Because under that was the unspoken assumption that there'll always be someone to take care of you. In other words, a man. And that was fine with me, because I didn't understand money. I just wanted to spend it. And I actually married a man who was a lawyer, then he went to work for Block, and then he became a financial planner and a stockbroker. So he was perfect, right?
Right.
So he managed everything. But what I found out very early in our 15-year marriage is that he was a compulsive gimp. And over the course of that 15 years, he lost almost all the my trust fund.
Oh, my.
And the insane part is I knew he was doing it. But I was so terrified, so intimidated by anything financial. I just closed my eyes and went into denial. And it wasn't until one day I went to the bank, to the ATM, and I wanted to take out something like $60. And I put my card in, and the screen kept saying, sorry, no money. Well, it doesn't say sorry, no money. But that was much better than insufficient funds. You know, I stood there looking at that over and over again. No money. This was never supposed to happen to me. And that was the moment I came out of denial. And that was the moment I knew I had a problem. So I decided to get rid of the problem. And I got a divorce. But I still decided...
But you still didn't have any money.
That money's not my thing. I had some real estate that he couldn't get to that popped in monthly income. So here's what happened. I said, I had this monthly income come in. No problem. I just don't want to deal with money. It's so confusing. And I got tax bills for over $1 million for back taxes my ex didn't pay, bills he got us in, and my signature was on everything. And my husband was no dummy. He left the country. I asked my father to lend me the money, and he refused. And I can tell you, after years of therapy, that was the best thing he could have done. But at the time, I was furious. I was terrified. It was like that was the moment I knew I had to get smart. I had three daughters. One was just a baby. I was not going to raise those girls in the street. And that's when it all started. And I was a freelance. I was writing for the San Francisco Business Times, a freelance journalist. And I got hired as a freelance project to interview women who had money. And when I went through those interviews, I heard how these women went from being ignorant to being smart. And it's like, oh, that's how you do it. No one ever explained it to me. No one ever explained the process. I had no role models. And in a very short time, I not only got smart enough to figure out my own money, and I've been managing it very well with a financial help advisor, but I went and wrote my first book, Prince Charming Isn't Coming, How Women Get Smart About Money. And since then, I've been on the lecture circuit, and I was really successful, and the book has done really well, but I couldn't make money. So I went out and I interviewed women who made six figures, and before I even finished writing Secrets of Six Figure Women, I was making three times what I ever had. And then I wrote my last book, Overcoming Under Earning, in which I interviewed women who had been through, hundreds of women who had been through my workshops called Overcoming Under Earning, and many of them brought their new workbooks home to their husbands or their boyfriends, so I interviewed men for that too. So my focus is on really revolutionizing women's relationship with money through making more and managing it better.
Well, Barbara, as I'm listening to you now and I was reading your material, I noticed similarities to what I consider the greatest and most successful business book of all time, which is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Now, Napoleon Hill interviewed the most successful business people of his day. Henry Ford, Charles Schwab, Theodore Roosevelt, Wilbur Wright, William Jennings Bryan, John Rockefeller, Thomas Edison, and I could go on and on. And he noticed certain commonalities about these very, very successful, of course, back then it was all men, and he wrote a book describing these commonalities. Presumably, his readers could say, okay, here's what all these guys who were terribly successful had in common. And if I try to emulate some of these traits, perhaps I could be more successful. Could you, in a nutshell, summarize your 20 years of work and give some of our readers a couple of these type of thoughts or pieces of advice that you might have noticed in terms of similarities and commonalities among these people? And I assume that most of the people that you interviewed were women, so this wouldn't just be for anybody, but let's say a little bit more suited for women.
Let me tell you, I found, first of all, I love being in the company of Think and Grow Rich. That's awesome. Nobody's ever compared my book to that book, so I'll take it. But the interesting thing is, I wrote this for me because I used them as role models. And when I learned how they got smart, I got smart. When I learned how they made more money, I made more money. And I've helped thousands and thousands. But here's, I think there's a lot of commonalities. But the biggest one for me is what I call, there is a combination of what I call the outer work of wealth, the inner work of wealth, and the higher work of wealth. What got me stuck is I was very focused on the outer work of wealth, you know, figuring out the difference between a stock and a bond and diversifying and all these words. But it's just like I couldn't get myself going. My eyes would glaze over. My brain would fog up. It just, I couldn't get it. And it wasn't until I started doing what I call the inner work of wealth, which is dealing with my attitudes, my feelings, my thoughts, and my decisions and my early messages around money, that I really started making progress. And I saw one of the things that differentiates men from women is that, by and large, men were raised to be financially successful. By and large, women were raised to be financially dependent. Mm-hmm. The problem is no one taught either one of us how to manage our money or make more of it. So women have these psychological, sociological blocks that many men don't have. And when I started dealing with mine, and when I've noticed when people get stuck, when you do the inner work combined with the outer work, it like clears the way. And then there's what I call the higher work of wealth. And this is very much what I've seen with successful women. Once a woman reaches financial stability, you know, she has her debts paid off, she has enough to meet her needs. There's three levels of financial development. I'm going to backtrack. There's survival, stability, and affluence. Once a woman reaches financial stability, she is just not that motivated by money. Men are very motivated by perks and profits and prestige, you know, but not women. What motivates women is the chance to help others. And so one of my soapboxes, one of my beefs with the financial industry is they try to motivate women through scary stuff, through grim statistics and scary scenarios. But what really motivates women to really take responsibility for their money is being able to use their money to help others. This is what I call the higher work.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because in reading your materials, it's, you don't say things like buy IBM or sell AT&T. Or you don't even really talk about necessarily the things that I do, which is save for retirement plans, put money in Roth IRAs, do Roth IRA conversions, opt for the 401k, the Roth 401k instead of the regular. And you seem to be putting it more in terms of psychological frames of mind. And surprisingly enough, I read a lot of the reviews of your books on Amazon, and I expected, with all due respect, for people to say, oh, all this psychobabble, you know, why doesn't she just give us some good, solid investment advice? But actually, they were pretty glowing. And your parents... Well,
here's the thing, Jim.
And you're changing people's lives, and it was really interesting to me.
Here's the thing. I send my women to people like you. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that... I really believe in working with financial advisors. I absolutely, and I noticed that the women that I interviewed that had the highest net worth were not the ones that necessarily made the most money or inherited the most or married the most, but they were the ones that worked with financial professionals, usually a team of them. But here's the problem. If you look back the past 20 years, every year we come out with some new research about women and money. And for 20 years, it said the same thing. Women know we need to get smart. We know we need to do more with our money, but we aren't doing it. Mm-hmm. Women are not protecting themselves financially. And that's where I wanted to intervene. That's where I wanted to make the difference. I wanted to motivate, because research shows us that women do not get serious about managing money until they hit a crisis, until they lose a job, lose a spouse, or on the brink of retirement, which, as you know, Jim, is the worst time to start. So I wanted to motivate women. I wanted to get them excited about money. I wanted them to open up their brain and enjoy it so they could work with people like you. Because I hear from my financial advisor friend how difficult it is for them to work with, for example, new widows or women that are scared and won't do anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So Prince Charming isn't coming around the corner. and by this, do you mean that that really you're on your own?
Well, here's what I mean.
And you better take care of business.
No, here's what I mean. We can have our prince. We just need to change the job description. He's no longer our rescuer, our savior. He is our partner. And I say the same thing about financial professionals. They make lousy Prince Charmings. You want them as your partner. But you bet, what I want to motivate women to do, what I want to inspire them, what I want to help them do, is to participate in financial decisions from a place of knowledge and not fear, ignorance, or habit, which is how most women have made financial decisions.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I have, well over 1,000 clients, and I usually see couples together with husbands and wives. And usually, and maybe it's the type of people that are attracted to the kind of thing that I talk about, and it's, you know, I don't talk about psychological stuff. I talk about Roth IRAs and Roth IRA conversions and the best estate plans, etc. And usually, I tend to attract a lot of engineer type, quantitative type, a lot of college professors, mid-level managers. And often I do have women who, they're there, but they defer to their husbands more than I would like. But then I also notice that they are listening and that they are concerned, but they seem to say, well, whatever he says is okay, even if, and it's interesting, you said that you knew that what your husband was doing wasn't right. Sometimes, you know, I work with some stubborn engineers, and I'm telling them things that I would do differently, and I can see that their wives are agreeing with me, knowing that, with all due respect, that I know more than their wonderful husband, the engineers, but she kind of still says, well, whatever he says.
Yep. That is the conditioning that we've had. It is also reflects a lack of confidence, and we don't trust ourselves. And that's the shift that I want to make. I'm more interested in making a mental shift so that women will walk in your office and they will, one, understand what you're saying, and then have the guts and the strength and the confidence to say, this is what I believe.
Well, see, I would love that too, because usually we come to results that I'm pretty happy with, but sometimes we don't, and sometimes, frankly, people don't do what I recommend, even though to me it's kind of obvious, and I see
and I
see the wife kind of agreeing with me, but she kind of goes along with him, and a lot of times, at the risk of sounding sexist, but just actuarially, men are going to die sooner. Most of my clients are relatively affluent, so there's usually at least enough money till the first death, so that the real benefits of some of the advice that I'm giving is not necessarily just when husband and wife are alive, but usually after one is gone, and that one is more times than not the husband. So it's going to be the woman who presumably ultimately benefits from good advice, or frankly suffers from bad advice.
So I'm going to tell you something that I realized very early, that women's difficulty with money, the difficulty you're seeing for them to grasp, or even when they grasp it, to speak out, to speak up, to own it. Women's difficulty with money has nothing to do with money. I say in all my books, this is not about money. And I'd love to hear Nicole's take on this. This is not about money. This is about power. Because I believe that financial responsibility, financial smarts, financial success is a rite of passage into our power. And this is what women are uncomfortable with.
You know, I've stood up in front of a lot of groups of women, and everything you're saying, Barbara, is so true. And, you know, you said something about you don't want to talk about the fear, and you don't want to put fear in their face, but I think it's already there.
No, because, I don't want to use fear to motivate them.
No.
But
I think that's what's paralyzing them, because
Yes. They
know they already make, a 25% less than a man, I think, still in 2010. I think for every dollar a man makes, a woman makes 76 cents or something like that. They know that they're living longer. They know that most women are out of the workforce, most women, for childbearing and rearing, and also now that we have the long-term care epidemic. I mean, there's a lot of people having to stay home and take care of mom or dad because the daughter is getting stuck with that task. All of these things are overwhelming. And you say that these women would say to themselves, how am I going to overcome this? And my answer was always, go talk to someone. Take action and be proactive. You know what I mean? Those are challenges, yeah. And those are constants. And you know...
Here's the thing, Nicole. I found I was one of those women
mm-hmm.
who knew I had to do something. But until I was 46 years old, I didn't do anything.
Yes.
Now, I'm not alone in this.
Oh, no.
Our research shows us that women, over 50% of the women, are intimidated by money, and they, even though they know they need to do more, they are not doing it. And this is the woman I want to speak to, and this is the woman I don't believe the financial industry has really looked inside women's head to see why, how can we do this differently?
I agree with that.
So Prince Charming might have already come, but you're saying how to deal with it, because it's a really frustrating for me when I see a woman, and I can tell that she wants to do either what I'm recommending or something other than what her husband is recommending, and it's really frustrating, and I never really thought about it the way you're saying it. It's really not necessarily a question of money, it's a question of power.
It's a question of power. Mm-hmm. It is a question of power. She is afraid to step up to the plate and into her power.
Yep.
Because it would upset the apple cart. And it would. Now, what I have found is that unbeknownst to women, most men love this. And what happens, see, there's the other side. Some men don't because of the way we have been enculturated. I'll never forget one of my early book signings with Prince Charming Isn't Coming. I had a man come up to me. This was in Southern California. And I had a man come up to me afterwards, and he said, I'm not going to buy your book for my wife. And I thought, well, you chauvinist. And he said, I'm afraid if she sees how bad I've done, she'll leave me. And those words stuck with me.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, this, when women start becoming financially educated and financially responsible, this lifts the burden from men and women.
Mm-hmm.
If we can do this jointly, it's so much better. And some men, it's very threatening. And the conversations need to be had. I mean, you could do so much, Jim, if you felt comfortable, to facilitate the conversation and let her ask her what she thinks, ask her to speak up, and then facilitate the conversation. So he hears her and she hears him.
Well, it almost sounds like you have a separate market for financial advisors.
Oh, it's such, I know, but I have to tell you, financial advisors aren't real open to what they call the touchy-feely stuff,
well,
which is too bad.
That is too bad.
Well, the thing is, I think that there is, I myself am not open to what I'll call bad touchy-feely, and unfortunately, there are people in the touchy-feely world who don't have a lot to offer necessarily. I don't think that that's true of what you are saying.
My background, I have my master's in counseling psychology. So I for women, we have really underrated. We have not paid attention to the emotional, psychological. Let me tell you, I remember I had a friend who worked for Harris Associates. That they took a poll. And they were working with this company, and they were taking a poll, and he was doing focus groups around money, women and couples and money. This was 5 years ago, maybe 8 years ago. And one day he called me, he said, you know, and he had just come from a focus group, and he said, you know, like this was new information, money is a really emotional topic for women. And I said, you think?
What an epiphany there.
For him.
Yes.
It was.
Exactly. Well, you know what, Barbara, we need to take a quick break.
Sure.
Alrighty, so we're going to take a quick break. We're here with Jim Lang, Barbara Stanny. We're talking about women and money, and you are listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Welcome back to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. This is Nicole DiMartino. I'm here with Jim Lang and Barbara Stanny, and we're talking about women and money.
Well, I actually have a specific question, and maybe you could advise some of the women that would go to the workshop or encourage women to go to the workshop for this reason. Now, I'll get a tiny bit technical, but I think that frankly I have to really get to the essence of this. The estate plan that most attorneys draft, and it's very, very common, and some people call it the Unified Credit Shelter Trust, and some people call it the Exemption Equivalent Trust, and some people call it the B Trust. But what is very typical, and I would say the majority of attorneys, particularly when the tax law was the exemption, meaning the amount that you were allowed to die with without any estate tax, when it was $600,000, typically drafted these trusts. And basically what it says is all the money up to a certain point goes into the trust. So rather, let's take the old paradigm where the husband dies first, and maybe a lot of the financial wealth of the couple is in the husband's name. Rather than leaving it to their spouse, to their wives, the money goes into a trust instead. And the terms of the trust are the wife can get the income, and the wife can get the principal for health, maintenance, and support. And often, the local bank was the trustee. And when you ask couples, well, what do you want to do? They typically say, well, I want to provide for each other. But then the attorneys would draft these trusts. And there's a formula in the trust that basically say the amount that goes into this trust. And then they have language that you can't understand, but it ultimately is the amount of the exemption amount. So this year, if you died, all your money would go into this trust, leaving the spouse with zero. Next year, and who knows what it'll be, but let's say $1 million, or if they change it to $3.5 million. So you have all this money going into a trust where the surviving spouse is probably, in my opinion, particularly for a leave-it-to-beaver marriage, that is, you both have the same children, would be a much better beneficiary. So I sometimes see this, and sometimes people come in and I point out, oh, well, gee, this really isn't so wonderful for the surviving spouse, because if you die, rather than her being able to do whatever she wants or travel or buy a vacation home or help the grandkids with their education or do whatever they want, she's just going to be limited to income and health, maintenance, and support. I really prefer this flexible plan, and then I try to tell them about the plan that I consider the ideal estate plan. And I sometimes see the women wanting this plan because they don't want to be restricted. But then the husband, in his infinite wisdom, say, no, it's okay the way it is. And it's really not. And I see the woman not happy.
Can I tell you a story?
Privately, I'll ask you what I can do, but what should a woman do in that story?
I'm going to tell you a story.
Tell me the story.
My father died 6 years ago, about 2 years before he died. Now, my father was the R of H&R Block, right? He made his living helping people with their finances, correct?
And he built a phenomenal.
He built up a fortune. So about 2 years before he died, and he was very ill, I went to my mother and I said, Mom, what do you know what Dad has planned for you? And she goes, oh, yeah, he's taking care of everything. I said, oh, good, then tell me what he has planned. And she had no idea. And I said, well, then let's go in. He was in his study. Let's go in and ask him. I was so nervous. My mom was so nervous. My dad was so nervous when we came in. This is not something people want to talk about.
No.
And it was very clear that my dad did not have much time left. But people are very scared of facing their mortality, and it wasn't easy. Well, what turned out is that my dad had something very similar to what you're talking about. I don't know if it's the exact thing. But the end result was that he did not leave a lot of money to my mother. And he left a lot of it to charity. And my mother was shocked. So what I did, and I had two other sisters, but I was the only one who said, Mom, you are going to get your own estate planner. You're going to get your own tax accountant. You are going to get your own investment advisor, because my dad had none of those. My dad did everything himself. And this was very, very scary for her. The best thing, one of the best things, what we did, I found a couple names of estate planners, and I flew to her town, and I took her to these appointments. If you can enroll adult children in this, it would be great. If you could get the woman to talk, if she could talk about it, it would be great. If you could absolutely educate her slowly, slowly. What happened with my mother is that we took her to this estate planner like yourself, who is fabulous, fabulous. And he was really patient, and he really educated with her. And then brought my dad in, who was not happy about this at all, not happy. But I will tell you, he went along, and we really encouraged my mother. When my father died, all my mother had to do was grieve, because everything was taken care of, and she understood it, and she knew it.
Now, did he change stuff as a result of this?
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, big time.
All right, so...
Big time.
Yeah, because what I find is people will often even say it is my goal to take care of my spouse, and that's even more important than the kids, and it's more important than taxes and everything else. But a lot of times, the standard estate plan, if you will, doesn't provide for that. They just provide income for the spouse.
It's true. And I have to agree with you, and I'm not an estate planner. But I work with them, and I work with people like my mother a lot. And I just, my job is to encourage women, as scary as it is, and it is scary for women, to encourage them to get support, to talk, what my mother did, we had her talk to other wives, other women, her friends, who stepped up to the plate and did what she's doing. She found very sensitive advisors. And I can tell you, Jim, are very sensitive. What I would encourage you is get her to talk more and bring out her opinion more.
All right. Well, let's say for discussion's sake that, by the way, one rule that I do have, I do offer free consultations for people who come to my workshop. But if they are not married, I say that you have to bring your spouse. So if a husband says, oh, no, my wife will go along with anything I want, I say, well, if that's true, then you can bring her. I will not meet. I will literally not meet with him unless, you know, unless she's in a retirement home or she's disabled, and
yes.
And even then, I will make house calls.
See, what I found is that women are very scared of this whole thing called finances, because men are like me, you know, our brains fog up and all that. But when you nudge them and when you educate them little by little, they really get into it. They really get into it, and they get excited, because as every woman says to me, as my mother said to me, the other day, she goes, you know, Barbara, I feel so powerful after a meeting with her financial advisors. I said, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Well, can I ask you a specific question then? So
let's say
that a woman has come to one of my workshops, and I think that, you know, a lot of times that's one of their first, let's say, more sophisticated, real financial workshops, and they really got the real thing with Roth IRAs and Roth IRA conversions and estate planning, and particularly this flexible estate plan, which is usually a big, big change from what they have. Now, what I'm trying to do is obviously trying to help them, and also, frankly, I want them to be a client. I don't want them to walk away and say, well, gee, Jim, that was great information, but I'm just going to go back to my old plan, which, frankly, some people, particularly men, are more comfortable to leave things alone. What would you say to that woman who has been to the workshop, and the other thing is we give away the book at the workshop, and, you know, that's the bestseller with Charles Schwab and Jane Bryan Quinn and all the other, or not all, but many of the other famous financial authors who give glowing testimonials. So it's the real thing. The woman kind of knows that, yeah, I'm right, but her husband is being resistant, and I kind of sense this. How would What advice would you have for those women? Should they just say, no, dear, no, I'm not cooking you another meal until we get this done, or I'm trying to keep it clean.
What needs to happen first, the woman needs incentive to speak up and potentially rock the boat. She needs incentive. Two, what women care about is relationship. Women are all about relationships. Men are all about performance. They're all about the end results. Not women. We're all about relationship. So one of the things that's important for women, and I've been through like 7 financial advisors till I found the one I'm still using for 10 years. But she really took time to build a relationship with me. Because women are very scared of this, and they distrust people in the financial industry often. So,
as they should, frankly. I mean, there's a lot of not-so-good financial advisors out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of not-so-good doctors out there. There's a lot of not-good massage therapists out there, I mean, but the thing is, you need to take time to build the relationship with her. And the way you build a relationship with a woman is not just to tell her what you think, but to listen to how she feels. And then, as you build the relationship and she feels heard and understood, the thing that motivates her, as I said in the beginning, is knowing she can help others. Knowing she can use the money that you save her, that you get for her, to help her children, to give to causes she believes in, to really make other people's lives better. Knowing that she can use this money, that if she really has a very compassionate talk to her husband. See, there's nothing more intimate between a husband and wife, because the sex is the easy part. It's discussing money. It's very, very intimate. And to use those discussions to build intimacy because you're on the same team, what often happens is when they have this discussion, they see themselves on opposing teams. But if you or someone in your office could facilitate discussions where they see themselves on the same team, where they learn how to listen to each other, where they're gentle because there's a certain fragility and vulnerability in talking about changing things around money. And if you can use that to bring them closer, and the woman understands that if she can make this change, she'll have more money to help her kids, to help the cause that she feels passionate about, then it becomes a very different conversation.
All right, and then...
Does that make sense to you?
Well, it does, and what I'm taking away from this is... frankly, usually, I try to listen as a rule. In fact, that's one of the hardest things for me to do, is because I have all this information,
right?
And I have the answers, and I just I'm bursting to give it to them. Oh, if you just do this, it'll. But what I am trained to do, and what I constantly do, although frankly, I have to remind myself, is to listen and let the client be heard. And what you're saying is that it's upon me to not just listen to the husband, but literally to draw some of the opinions from the woman, even if she doesn't come out
so when
openly
you,
and talking.
Exactly. So when you hear her, or she gives some body language or something, look on her face, that she seems to agree, it's very valid to turn to her and say, well, what do you think of this? And ask her pertinent questions. See, because I'll tell you another thing about women. And Nicole?
Yes?
Tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
But we women like choices.
Absolutely.
And one of the things we women are so busy. We have so many things on our plate that we want to know that there's somebody who will take care of us, who will make life easier for us. If you can show her her choices, listen to her concerns about everything, show her how something will make her life easier, how you will make her life easier, how this will make her life easier, how it will allow her to help others and live life on her terms. You could have a powerful conversation. But the thing with women, you can't be too impatient. It is time. Women make great clients. They have much better loyalty than men. Mm-hmm. They are much quicker to refer their friends and family. They know they need help, but they take time. And the more affluent a woman is, the more time she needs to think about things. When she says, I'll think about it, she really means that. I'll think about it. And then she'll have to talk to her husband or her friends or her other people. You know, we're very social animals.
You know, one point I want to make before the end of the show, and I know we still have some time left, but and it's buried in the story about your mom and the estate planning. When I would stand up and talk to groups of women, one part of my talk was about it's never too late to take this control.
Beautiful.
And,
beautiful.
You know, I would work with financial advisors and say they saw some younger 20-year-old women coming in and they'd, oh, well, they're young. They don't have any money. But that's when I got most excited. I mean, women 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, it is never. Are you agreeing with me? It's never.
You are. Listen, my mother was in her late 70s, and she didn't know anything about money.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom is completely involved now. We have family meetings.
Yeah.
The advisor comes and talks to us. Yes, you are so right. It is never too late. It's best to start when you're young, but it's never, ever too late to start.
Absolutely. And as a young woman, the best thing I ever did was I had a mentor in my office on my first job, and I was 22 years old. She told me to get a financial plan, and I said, Nancy, I don't have any money. And she said, that's okay. We'll start small, and one day you will. And, you know, if anyone's listening,
smart.
You know, pass that word along. And it's really, it is powerful. And I'm so thankful that because I had that early education, now I was in the industry, not everybody is, I'm very fortunate because now I know that no matter what happens, I can take care of myself, I'll be okay. And it is powerful.
It is very powerful.
It's very powerful, but you have to get over that because women aren't used to acting like men.
So what, and nor should we.
That's true, that's right.
Nor should we. What I tell women who really want to learn about money is to do it in groups. There's a lot of study groups and book clubs forming now.
Sure.
I know they use my book.
Mm-hmm.
And they meet and they talk together. And they educate themselves. You know, a book club, but this is only about finances. Study groups about finances. That really helps. If you could have in your seminars a time like in the seminar that I give, that I have,
mm-hmm.
for financial advisors, we have time where women can talk about their fears and their concerns and their emotions.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to be a psychologist, but you just need to hear them and respond to them and not dismiss them. Women are very used to being dismissed.
Yes, they are. And the one thing that always bothered me about the workshops where I saw women carry a lot of shame around.
Oh,
as far as money is concerned, where men do not. And if they've made mistakes or they haven't done things right, they don't even want to tell you. Because that'll be shameful.
I do a lot of work with successful executives and affluent women.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk, I always advise women to seek financial advisors.
Sure.
Seek financial advice. But what I hear from women, particularly successful women,
mm-hmm.
is how embarrassed
yes.
they are.
Embarrassed.
They said, you know, I've had them say, I handle billions of dollars
uh-huh.
for my company.
Mm-hmm.
I am a mortgage broker, but mm-hmm. my own finances are a mess.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of shame, a lot of embarrassment, which keeps them from coming to you.
That's right.
For
they
the help
tell
they
them.
Need.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know what?
Oh.
We are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Jim Lang and Barbara Stanny on the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Well, welcome back from the commercial break, the last segment of our show here with Barbara Stanny and Jim Lang. We're having a wonderful, candid conversation about women and money. And
well, Barbara, I did have a question. So let's say I'm one of the women in the audience, and my goal, I consider myself an educator, and I've tried to present some good information, and I'd say for me the greatest epiphany is it for a lot of women, it's not really about money, it's about power. But let's say that I've got some good information from you, and I'm interested in more information. I know that you have, let's say, 5 books out there, and if I was a listener, and let's just say for discussion's sake, I wasn't going to go out and buy all 5 because I have limited time and resources. Is there one book that you would recommend, or would there be like a different book for a different type of person? Could you please make a recommendation?
Yes.
And then whether somebody should get it at Amazon or at your website?
They should get it at Amazon. I don't sell books directly. We just send them to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But if you're interested, if you want to learn how to better manage money and to understand the process and what's keeping you stuck, Prince Charming Isn't Coming, that's the book for you. If you're wanting to know how to make more money and you feel like you're just not making the money you deserve, Overcoming Under-Earning is the book for you. If you feel like you're somewhat successful, but you know you could go higher, Secrets of Six-Figure Women. And then if you know you're successful and you want to go higher and you want to make more money, but you know that success is about far more than making money, then I'm giving a retreat on September 23rd called the Sacred Success Retreat. And this comes, I base this on, I interviewed women who made millions. And I want to know how they did it so I could do it too. And what I've learned has been eye-opening for me. And I put it together in this seminar, and I'm writing a book on the same subject, Sacred Success. And if you're interested, you can go to my website, barbarastanny.com, and look under events.
Well, that sounds very helpful. Does this have, I have a client that wrote a book that I think was somewhat revolutionary. It's called Women Don't Ask. And I think one of her...
Great book. Babcock?
Yeah, Linda Babcock.
Oh, my God, great book.
Yeah,
I love it. I quote her. That's your client? That's impressive.
She's a very nice lady.
Tell her I'm a big fan.
All right,
I will.
I will make a mention of it.
Now that's a must read.
Yeah, and by the way, the thing that I like about you and the thing I like about her, I mean, she's no flake. She's a PhD, Carnegie Mellon professor who has multiple scholarly journals and is very well respected in her field. And I don't know if there's any overlap, but in your underachieving book. But
it's not underachieving, it's under-earning.
Under-earning, sorry about that.
Under-earners are
definitely high not underachieving.
Okay, sorry.
We don't want to do that.
No, you can make 6 figures and be an under-earner.
Okay.
That's true.
All righty. So, can you go through that real quickly again? Because I was writing some of them down, and you had a which book for which purpose.
Okay, And I also forgot to mention that I have a booklet that you would love, Jim. It's called How to Find a Financial Advisor That You Can Trust. And I suggest you give these out. They're very inexpensive. I suggest you give these out to women in your seminars. And I'll tell you why. Because the question I am asked most often in the 15 years I've been doing this from women, because I'm such a big fan of working with financial professionals, is how do I find one I can trust? Mm-hmm. Because, there's, snake oil salesmen among the best of you, and then there's people like you who are terrific. And so for anyone who wants to know how to find one, how to ask the right questions, how to do your research, this is a great book. You can only get that on my website. But if you're having trouble getting smart or smarter about money, Prince Charming is for you. Prince Charming Isn't Coming. It really deals with the inner work, the outer work, and the higher work of managing money and understanding it. If you're not making the money you desire or deserve, despite all your efforts to do otherwise, then Overcoming Under-Earning is exactly the book you need. And it's the most powerful book I've written, and it's definitely the best book on under-earning, because there are a few books out there on that subject. And then the third book, Secrets of Six-Figure Women, if you've achieved much, but you're just on the brink, you could go higher, there's more out there, Secrets of Six-Figure Women is just, it's a, It'll blow your mind. I interviewed 154 women who made anywhere from 100,000 to 7 million. And the process that took them to get there. Now, I had never made over $50,000 in my whole life until I interviewed these women. And I started making over $100,000 before even finished writing the book.
See, that sounds Napoleon Hill-like to me.
Oh, I'd never compared it to him. But yes, I mean, I only write. I only teach what I need to learn. And that's why I'm moving on to Sacred Success. I've taught overcoming under-earning for 10 years. I'm done with that now. I have other people to teach it. I am moving on to the process, because the process that it takes for a woman to reach financial stability is very different for a woman once she reaches stability to get to and maintain affluence.
You are a woman on a mission, I have to tell you, and I love it.
Oh, Nicole, I want to support you because I can tell you really get this stuff. You really get women.
I really care.
You really have a lot to say to
them. I really care about women.
I know. I feel it.
I do.
And I don't say that to everybody just because you're a woman. But
well,
I really get
you.
It.
I appreciate that. And we're at the end of our hour now, and we have to say goodbye. But this has just been fabulous. I've enjoyed it. I know Jim has too. And if anybody out there, you want to learn more, you can go to Barbara's website, barbarastanny.com. You could get her books there. You could look at the retreat. And that's barbarastanny.com, BarbaraStanny. If you want more information about us at the Lang Financial Group, you can jump on our website at retiresecure.com. And I think that's all for myself and Jim. You've been listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Portions of the audio that you just heard will be posted online at retiresecure.com. You can also find a list of upcoming events and topics at retiresecure.com. To seek Jim's advice personally or to speak to a member of his dedicated staff at Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, call 412-521-2732. Join us again in 2 weeks when we talk more smart money.